if I'm saying that correctly?
It is. I believe my opposing counsel may have just...
Ah, she didn't.
...for a minute. Would it be all right if I...
Take a quick look and see if she's out there. If not, we can take another case first.
She doesn't know we imprison them once they...
Not permitted to leave. Don't see her?
No luck, Your Honor.
That's fine. Well, we'll take Rohde, if I'm saying that correctly, Rohde versus Rohde.
Gotcha. Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Sharon Blackford, and I am representing Shudan Rohde, the appellant in this case, who is, or was, in court with me today. And I request 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Thank you. I'd like to focus primarily on the exclusion of Mr. Rohde's income bonus from the child support work calculations. It was not included as gross income. And then I can touch briefly on other issues as they arrive. And unfortunately, I do have a cold, so if my voice goes out, I apologize. In 2011, the most recent year for which bonus income information was available at this 2012 trial, Mr. Rohde earned over $35,000 above and beyond the base pay that the trial court used for calculating the income in child support. In 2010, the year before, he earned over $30,000 more than that base pay figure.
Other than the fact that he had, I think, been three successive years he had received a bonus, was there anything else that supported that would support a finding that he, in fact, would get a bonus in succeeding years?
Well, I guess your question might be going to, is it a recurring or a non-recurring bonus? The statute on non-recurring bonuses, of course, does say that bonuses can be non-recurring, but it directs the court to look at the previous two calendar years of income to determine whether the bonus is recurring or non-recurring. And that's why, and that's 26.19.075 sub 1 sub B that directs the court to do that. And that's why, because in those previous 2 years there were those substantial bonuses, under that standard, it should be included as gross income. Also, the fact that Mr. Rohde works at a high level in an industry where bonuses are typically part of the compensation package, and that testimony was brought out at trial, supports the idea that bonuses are something that can be expected. One never knows if a bonus will be given in any particular year, but secretaries don't receive bonuses, and high-tech people at a high level much more often do. So for those reasons, it really does not seem like it qualified as a non-recurring bonus. It was also strange that in the text of that area of non-recurring bonus on the child support worksheet, the judge referred to it as an annual bonus, and it certainly has been annual, or had been annual as of the time of trial.
Is it a question of law or fact whether it's a recurring or non-recurring bonus?
I think it's a mixed question of law and fact, Your Honor.
To the extent it is in part a question of fact, why doesn't the trial court's, at least his oral ruling, although a little abbreviated, say, well, I'm looking at this, I think it's variable and needs to be part of the decision-making, but only to a limited extent. Isn't that saying I'm not buying that this is a recurring bonus?
To the extent that it's a factual finding, I think that it's a finding that isn't supported by the record, and it's absolutely incorrect. But I think that to the extent that you're interpreting what is recurring and how to apply, you know, that recurring statute, I think it's a question of law. But I think there's actually no support. If this isn't a recurring bonus, I'm not sure what would be a recurring bonus. I have trouble imagining what would satisfy that standard if this does not satisfy it.
Can't the court look to his testimony casting doubt on the viability of the case?
Certainly, and as I'm sure Your Honor knows, and we all know, having done many divorce cases, every time there's something like a bonus or extra performance income at issue during divorce time, there is inevitably testimony, and it's often well-founded, that this year I'm not going to be getting one because my performance has been at issue. There was testimony like that here. I'm not casting doubt on the sincerity of it, but the fact is that people don't perform well at work when they're going through divorce trials, and often they don't get a bonus that year, but generally it's just common sense that they bounce back. So
that's the facts and circumstances that go into the trial court's exercise of discretion, which is clearly what this statute permits. You've got a couple of other issues in this case you might want to touch on, given the limitations on time.
Yes, Your Honor. As far as the requirement of attending school full-time and the supposed effect of the CR2A agreement, that agreement has not made the full-time attendance requirement moot. According to the CR2A, Ms. Rohde would have to have remained in the Creekside neighborhood to be exempt from the full-time school requirement. She did rent there shortly after the divorce trial, but was not able to ultimately stay there. There was a relocation trial over this, and she ultimately was permitted to move out of Creekside to the Snoqualmie Ridge neighborhood, less expensive, where she lives now. So she's not currently functioning under the CR2A agreement, and she is currently subject to the full-time maintenance requirement. So that issue is not moot. That is appropriate for the court's resolution. And I am close to my time, so I will reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Very well, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Valerie Villison for the respondent, Joe Rohde. Fortunately, I am a picture of health, so I should be able to continue to speak. Mr. Rohde also has raised a conditional cross-appeal, but to be clear, ultimately what we would like this Court to do is to affirm the trial court's decision in its entirety. Don't remand this case for any issues and end the litigation that has plagued these parties for the last 2.5 years, which is nearly the third of the time that they were married. I'll address child support, obviously, since that was the bulk of counsel's argument, as well as the fact that it's part of our conditional cross-appeal. In answer to Judge Verlin's question, it is a question of fact whether or not this bonus income was recurring or non-recurring. And under the facts of this case, Judge Armstrong found it was non-recurring and did not include it as part of his income. And that was within the trial court's discretion under the statute. What was not under the trial court's discretion in the statute was the issue about whether or not to impute income to the mothers, to the mother for being voluntarily unemployed. And the reason I'm raising this issue is because you have to sort of look at the child support order altogether for the scheme of what the trial court was intending to do. What the trial court was intending to do is to establish a child support order that would support these two, the parties' two children, based on the income of the parties as the trial court found existed at the time of trial. And in this situation, for the father, it was the fact that he had his base income. They were sure of that. That's what he would receive. That the bonus income was variable at best. That he had testimony that his performance was low. You know, it was likely that he would not be receiving a bonus. And the trial court, under those circumstances, said, "I'm going to keep his income where I think he's going to get it, which is 185." For the and again, under the statute, the trial court had discretion to do that. For the mother, however, the trial court tried to do the same exact thing. It's like, you know, under the statute, they're required to impute income to a parent who is voluntarily unemployed. Clearly, under this situation, she's voluntarily unemployed. The only two circumstances where the statute gives the trial court the discretion to not impute income is if she's unemployable altogether, which is not the case because there's evidence that she could be employed and she'd been had a history of employment in the past, or if she was unemployed because of dependency orders. Under these circumstances, the trial court should have imputed income, but it didn't because, again, what it was trying to do with the father was take these parties where they were at the time of trial. And for her, the trial court put income at $4,500. Again, we're challenging that decision only to the extent you remand on any of the issues, but generally speaking, that was a fair determination for both parties for this child support order. The bonus, again, was not recurring. It's a fact-based decision. So we ask that you affirm the child support order. For the maintenance provision, it's a totally discretionary decision. $4,500 for 36 months. She'd already gotten a year's worth of maintenance while the litigation was pending. This was a very short marriage, less than 8 years. The trial court said, you know, there was evidence she could work, but the mother testified at trial that, you know, she was going to work, she wants to go to school, and she was, you know, she's not a person that sits around, and as soon as the trial was ready, was complete, she was going to start applying to school and had plans on, you know, attending UW in January. So the trial court said, fine, if you're going to go to school, I'll order maintenance, continued maintenance, because you've already gotten a year, for the next 36 months, but you have to go to school. There is nothing wrong with that decision. It was well within the trial court's discretion. The mother had already gotten 53% of the sale proceeds, well, when the house would be sold, so she'd have additional cash, as well as having support for the children. There was nothing wrong with that decision. The other issue that the appellant raised, she didn't raise in her oral argument, but in her brief, is this issue of Chinese New Year.
Before you go there, okay. What's the impact of the 2A agreement again?
The CR2A agreement, after the trial, they had agreed that they were going to forego that provision of full-time school for maintenance to continue, so long as the mother stayed in the school district of the children. So for so many months that she stayed in the school district, she wasn't going to school, and the father continued to pay $4,500 a month.
What impact, though, does it have on the appealability of?
Our position is that it mooted the issue because it's no longer an issue. Although, I suppose I will concede that, you know, because of the way the CR2A stipulation was drafted, it left it variable because, you know, if she moved, then the provision still stands. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at a RAP 18.1 financial affidavit, which I asked to strike because it's untimely, you'll see she is going to school and she's getting her maintenance.
So the issue is back in play?
Yes, okay. To the extent that we now know that she's moved.
Okay.
To the Chinese New Year, it just wasn't preserved. I mean, there's nothing in the record that shows that this mother had any strong feeling towards having Chinese New Year every New Year with the children. The only evidence at trial was the fact that the parenting evaluator had actually recommended that, but the mother, at least through cross-examination by her counsel, appeared to be offended by that notion that she should get every Chinese New Year and miss out on American New Year, as they put it. So the trial court said, you know, this is getting a little too confusing with this Chinese New Year. It lands at different times. There's no evidence that anyone strongly wanted it. So they took it out of play and just, you know, designated every other New Year. And we just ask that this court affirm the trial court's decision in its entirety. We ask this court to deny any request for attorney fees on appeal. Her financial affidavit was untimely.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. First, just touching briefly again on the child support issue, if this court isn't inclined to remand it for inclusion as gross income, it would be perfectly normal to do what I've seen many, many trial courts do in these family law cases, which is say that if there is a bonus, it could be split according to the percentage in the child support worksheet or some other way that the trial court can devise to avoid the situation of a windfall to the father, because that's what happens if the father receives a bonus right now. It's a 100% pure, untouched windfall to him. And I don't think that that is equitable or furthers the intent of the child support statute. So that is another avenue available to this court if this court were to remand to try to correct that inequity of a windfall.
Is it a bit of a windfall to the mother that income was not imputed to her by the judge?
I realize that upon reviewing the cases and the argument of opposing counsel that if this were remanded, it's possible that income might be imputed, and I think that there might be some validity to that argument. Yes.
Thank you.
The mother's not greedy. She understands this. Yes. I do want to say that as far as the Chinese New Year, the issue was raised. It was preserved properly. The cases that the respondent cites in their brief say that it must be presented. And another case says it must be presented in a substantive fashion. And then the case that said, which is Studebaker, which says it must be presented in a substantive fashion, cites Dalthorpe, which is a case that says, well, if you haven't characterized money, if you haven't asked the trial court to characterize money at the trial court level, then on appeal, you can't raise an issue and complain that it wasn't characterized. In other words, if you don't present it then, you can't present it now. And the thing is, she presented it in her
parenting plan. There was testimony about it. The parenting evaluator brought it up. And, of course, it was presented. The trial court ruled on it specifically. The trial court wouldn't have had anything to rule on if it hadn't been presented. So it was presented. And I think that there's really no merit to this idea that it wasn't preserved. It's clearly in the record, and it was presented in a substantive enough a fashion that there was a ruling on it, one that we disagree with, one we think is not in the children's best interest, but there was a ruling on it. So it was a preserved issue. As far as two things, if this court wishes to remand this to adjust that bonus to be less of a windfall and perhaps to adjust the imputation, it would not be appropriate to look at the father's current bonus situation in terms of whether there should be any retroactive effect of that computation, because the cases respondent cites on the court's ability to look at the current circumstances, while valid for what they are, only refer to the court's ability and obligation to look at present parental fitness in terms of residential requirements and you know, 191 limitations. It has nothing to do with looking at the situation now financially and then saying, okay, well then, if you got bonuses before, we'll just let that be a windfall to the father. There's really no support for that. Any ability to look back is just strictly for parental fitness, and that's not at issue in this case. And finally, if this court does decide to remand, it's worth noting that the judge that conducted this trial has retired. That judge's successor has no experience with this case. This case, as opposing counsel has noted, has had extensive litigation. The judge now who has the most familiarity with that case is Judge Prochnow, who just conducted the party's most recent trial and has retained jurisdiction for purposes of ADR. So I'd suggest it go back there if it goes back. Thank you.